Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website omahaschoolofmusicanddance.com. Couple of piano questions today. Question number one. The record for the largest piano ever made was held for many years by Adrian Mann, a piano tuner from New Zealand. But his record was surpassed by a piano builder in Poland by about 1 foot. So how long is the current largest piano ever made? Was it A, about 8 feet long, B, just over 19.5 feet long, or C, just under 30 feet long? So how long is the largest piano ever made, anyway? And question number two, how many strings are needed for a piano to make its full range of sound? Is that A, 88, B, 150, or C, 230? Number of strings in a piano? How many? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of December the 4th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1791 that composer Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart died in Vienna, Austria, at the age of 35. Today, in 1791. And it was 64 years ago today, 1956, that Elvis Presley, Carl Perkins, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Johnny Cash recorded together the Million Dollar Quartet. The session would not be released for 25 years. The Million Dollar Quartet recording today in 1956. And in country music news, we have this article published in the News and Observer on the 13th of November, 2020. After releasing two chart-topping albums in 2017, superstar country singer-songwriter Chris Stapleton is back with a new collection of songs coming out Friday. His fourth solo album, Starting Over, includes 11 original songs he co-wrote, as well as covers of John Fogerty's Joy of My Life, and Guy Clark's Worry Be Gone, and Old Friends. Special guests include Stapleton's wife, singer Morgan Stapleton, and the All Voices Choir. Prokofiev's introduces our classical music news. It's entitled Brandon Patrick George, Flute Sonatas and Solo Works, published in theflutereview.com on September the 1, 2020. B- Brandon Patrick George, flutist of the Grammy-nominated Imani Winds, releases his first solo album with Hainsler Classics on September the 18th, 2020. Spanning 300 years of music history, flute sonatas and solo works marks the debut of a major artist with a diverse repertoire and a bold approach to five monumental works for his instrument. Equally at home in Baroque and contemporary repertoire, George describes his album as a dialogue between the past and the future, recorded in collaboration with pianists Stephen Beck and Jacob Greenberg. The program documents not only George's intellectual preoccupations and virtuoso playing, but also his commitment to musical storytelling and richly emotive playing. Moving from the bravura summits of J.S. Bach's Partitia in A minor to the daring rhythms of Pierre Boulez's Sonatine for flute and piano, the opening tracks encapsulate both George's virtuosity and his fascination with the historical conversation between composers. As George notes, even while Boulez abandons traditional tonality and movement structure, he embeds echoes of sonata form with one continuous piece. Kalevi Aho's Solo 3 likewise looks back to the multiple voices of Baroque counterpoint at the same as it places very modern technical demands upon the player. George has recorded this piece using the celebrated platinum flute that Vernet Powell created for the 1939 World's Fair, taking advantage of its wide dynamic range and tone color to capture the extremes of Aho's composition. The album concludes with Sergei Prokofiev's Sonata Opus 94 in D major for flute and piano, a neoclassical composition written in the midst of World War II that continues the conversation between past and present in one of the composer's most life-affirming works. As a child in Dayton, Ohio, George recalls pressing his face against a pawn shop window to catch a glimpse of a flute on display. His fascination with the instrument led him to study at the Oberlin Conservatory of Music at Oberlin College under Michel Debust before receiving further training in Paris with Sophie Chérier. He received his Master of Music degree from the Manhattan School of Music, where he won the concerto competition and subsequently appeared as soloist in C.P.E. Bach's Flute Concerto in D minor. As a follow-up to this piece, SundayBaroque.org adds, as a child, Brandon Patrick George was instantly drawn to the flute. It looked beautiful and shiny, and he just knew in his heart that he was meant to play it. When he finally had the chance to pick an instrument to learn, there was no question he would choose the flute, and it has proven to be his perfect partner. The talented young musician is full of enthusiasm for everything from Baroque music to cutting-edge contemporary music. He has been hailed by the New York Times as the, quote-unquote, the elegant Brandon Patrick George, as a virtuoso by the Washington Post, and called a quote-unquote knockout musician with a gorgeous sound by the Philadelphia Inquirer. Since 2018, he has been the flutist of Imani Winds, succeeding founder Valerie Coleman, in a role that allows him to combine his passion for contemporary music with his dedication to advocacy for musicians of color. Finally, Brandon Patrick George himself adds, even though this is a modern flute debut, I prepared the Bach on Baroque flute, only practicing modern flute a few days before the recording. I wanted to bring those qualities to my modern playing. So the articulations I use, tempi, breaths for phrasing, etc., were all transferred to my modern flute playing and are very much intentional. The other fact is that I've had the good fortune of playing many excellent flutes over the years, and the famous Platinum Powell No. 365 is no exception. When the instrument was first loaned to me around the time of my recording, I thought of how best to try it out, like test driving a new car on the open road. And in jazz music news, we have this review of a new album, and it's published in The Week magazine, July 24, 2020. The album? Redman Meldow McBride Blade. It's called Round Again, and it's given 3 out of a possible 4 stars by The Week magazine. This newly reunited jazz supergroup possesses a scary level of talent, said Giovanni Russinello in the New York Times. It's been 26 years since saxist Joshua Redman gathered pianist Brad Meldow, bassist Christian McBride, and drummer Brian Blade to create an all-star quartet whose 1994 album Mood Swing helped establish all 4 as jazz's Generation X figureheads. In their second ever joint outing, they remain avatars of a moment when jazz's young lions found prestige in subtly building upon tradition, and yet the record shows how firmly each musician has grown into their own identity as an improviser, a composer, and an accompanist. Round Again's 7 original songs negotiate a balance between the swinging and the sober, says Chris Pearson in The Times, UK. It's especially nice to hear Redman and Meldow loosen up in the company of the ensemble's groovy bassist and drummer. Listen, for example, to Redman's Silly Little Love Song and McBride's Floppy Discs, a tune with an air of Mingus-like merrymaking. And in music research and technology and virus adaptation music news, we have this article written by Shiler Valesco, published in expmag.com on April 28, 2020, entitled, Putting on a Virtual Choir is Impossible. Everyone is doing it. Making music together with laptops, iPhones, and Logic Pro. As the world has gone digital, choral singing has remained a stubbornly analog affair. Choirs read music printed on paper, mark it up with pencil, then raise their voices together in the same room until COVID-19. The problem, an experience that can't be Zoomed. Group singing, people crowded together, drawing deep breaths and exhaling sound, is a decidedly unwise quarantine-era activity. And as anyone who has attempted a round of happy birthday at an online party can attest, it doesn't translate seamlessly to video platforms such as Zoom, where online delays and feedback can turn a song into cacophony. Under the current circumstances, Chris Ludwig, a music professor and choral director at Kalamazoo College in Michigan, can only hold live-streamed rehearsals for his college group by having singers mute their microphones and sing along with his conducting. I check in every 5 minutes or so to ask where we went wrong and what they need to hear again, but I have no idea if they're getting it, he says. The solution? Choir deconstructed. The virtual choir isn't brand new. Since 2010, Eric Whitaker, a celebrity choral composer and conductor based in Los Angeles and London, has led a team that takes sound files submitted individually by singers around the world and mixes them together digitally. Now, Whitaker's creations, once ambitious novelties in the choir world, have become a go-to model for directors like Ledwah. Whitaker's website says that it has been flooded in recent weeks with requests for text support and music rights. Putting a virtual choir together is a painstaking, deconstructed version of learning a song the conventional way. After independent practice, Ledwah has each of his 30 singers plug their headphones into their laptops, listen to a starting pitch and tempo track, then sing along into their phones and send him the result. After the first round, he coaches each singer individually to identify trouble spots. After students resubmit their parts, he uses Logic Pro to layer the tracks on top of one another, lining up entrances and cutoffs and adjusting mixing levels to balance the sound. It takes him about 20 hours to produce a rough cut. Next up is Unclouded Day, and a small group piece set to the words of Goodnight Moon, written by Whitaker. Ledwah didn't expect sound engineering to become a key part of his job. I certainly wouldn't have learned all this technology if not forced to do so, he said. And he misses the warmth and often quirky dynamics of his choral rehearsals, even the tiny interpersonal dramas familiar to anyone who's sung in a choir over missed notes, jangly jewelry, and bad perfume. But making music this way is better than not making it at all, Ledwah says, and he thinks that once in-person rehearsals come back, directors will still use the technology they became familiar with in social isolation to enhance their choirs, posting vocal parts online, offering more individual coaching, and perhaps finding ways to better involve singers who can't make it in person. The music making could be elevated to a new level and be much more nuanced, he says. I like that part of it. Ledwah says making a choir is a slow, imperfect process. People are recording in their homes and in their houses with outside traffic, roommates, pets, and the occasional crying baby in the background. Sound files take forever to load. Ledwah had to think carefully about the music he chooses. To make it simpler, his selections are all in English and mostly a cappella. For some choristers, too, singing alone without the safety net of the larger group can feel naked and uncomfortable. In a large group rehearsal, singers can show up unprepared and skate by unnoticed. In a virtual format, everybody has to pull their weight, Ledwah says. The Stones' Honky Tonk Woman introduces our rock and pop music news. It's entitled Stones Richards Watches Garden Grow, releases box set. This is written by Meskin Fekadu, Associated Press, 15th of November, 2020, published in the News and Observer. New York. Keith Richards is so old school that when he does his interviews, he'll do so from a landline. The Rolling Stones icon isn't a fan of technology. Years ago, he admitted to not owning an iPod when the device was most popular. He's one of the few people who hasn't downloaded Zoom during the pandemic, and he doesn't even own a cell phone. I'm not at all hooked in any high-tech internets, he says. I don't even have a cell phone, man. I'm talking to you from on a landline. Why would I want a cell phone? You crazy? The unbothered 76-year-old rocker has been home for a full year now. A first for Richards, he reveals. He, Mick Jagger, Ronnie Wood, and Charlie Watts wrapped part of their No Filter tour in August 2019, and they had plans to hit the road again in May 2020. But things changed following coronavirus outbreak. I saw the garden grow, really quite unbelievable, Richards explains. Usually I come, it's spring, and suddenly it's fall when I get back. I spent the whole summer actually admiring the garden and also doing a bit of gardening myself, watering the veggies and the stuff. I got into a more probably normal way of life, which is unnormal. While some performers in their 70s, including Stevie Nicks and Bruce Springsteen, fear the pandemic is preventing them from hitting the road during their key years, Richards isn't too concerned. I can't say I feel like a year has been stolen. I'll just make it up for later. I'm getting antsy, he admits. I guess I can take a year off, but it's in the bones. I guess, after all these years, it's in our calling, the body and everything. It's like, come on, where's our show, brother? It's kind of a little weird, but at the same time, we've all got greater things to deal with at the moment. In the meantime, Richards does have something to give his diehard fans that involves live music. On Friday, he's releasing a limited edition box set of his 1988 concert at the Hollywood Palladium, recorded during his first solo tour. Live at the Hollywood Palladium will be available on CD, vinyl, and digitally, and the show was in support of Talk Is Cheap, his first solo album also released in 1988. He's backed by the expensive Winos, a group of all-star players and good friends. The tour came at an uncertain time for the Rolling Stones. Some thought the group might be breaking up. The Winos came together because of the Stones around 1986 said, "There was a definite hiatus. Let's put it that way," Richard says, laughing. It's understandable, especially in retrospect, after those many years. Mick and I and the whole band thinking, it's the whole world, just the Rolling Stones? I suppose it was that kind of feeling, and I think Mick had it more than I did. But at the same time, we did need a break from each other, and as it turns out, it was a great help to us both. Richards admits being a band leader allowed him to fully understand what it was like to wear Jagger's shoes. I learned so much about what Mick's job is, about being the front man. That opened my eyes to it. With the Stones, I do a couple of songs anyway, so my appetite was kind of whetted that way. I wasn't totally foreign to the idea of it. Although doing the whole show like that, yeah, that's what I appreciated about Mick's job, he continued. It's a relentless thing, being the front man. In the Stones, I can move back and forth, hide behind Charlie, or stick my nose up. With the Winos, there's no retreating. Though Richards is currently in the U.S. and Jagger is in Europe, they've been in touch and have even traded song lyrics for the new Stones album. We kind of got used to that ever since the exile, having to work at a distance up until they threw us out of England, he says. Over the years, we've figured out how to put our stuff together in different ways. We're writing stuff now. I think we have about a half an album done. We kind of got hung up because of the usual, 2020. I haven't seen any of the boys since last year. We talk. But I haven't actually seen them. We can't finish this album that we're working on. The world got a taste of what the album sounds like with the track Living in a Ghost Town, which was written before the pandemic but released during it because the band felt it strongly resonated with the current times. Once the thing hit, I called Mick and said, "This ghost town is so appropriate, man. Let's put it out." We did. It was amazing. It sort of became an anthem in Europe for the whole damn thing, up until now. Let's say for wave one, he says. Mick wrote the lyrics, he adds. Maybe he's a prophet, huh? So how did you do on today's musical trivia questions about pianos? Well, the answer to our first question, the record for the largest piano ever made was held for many years by Adrian Mann, a piano tuner from New Zealand. But his record was surpassed by a piano builder in Poland by about 1 foot. So how long is the current largest piano ever made? Is it A, about 8 feet long, B, just over 19 and a half feet long, or C, just under 30 feet long? Correct answer? Answer B, just over 19 and a half feet long. Adrian Mann's piano was 18 and a half feet long. As noted in GuinnessWorldRecords.com, the largest piano measured 8 feet 2 inches wide, 19 feet 10 inches in length, and 6 feet 3 inches in height, and was constructed by Daniel Zapeski from Poland and played in a concert in Poland on 30 December 2010. Pianos usually have 88 keys. This record-breaking behemoth has 156 of them. And the answer to our second question, how many strings are needed for a piano to make its full range of sound? Was that A, 88, B, 150, or C, 230? Correct answer, answer C. There are, usually, 230 strings in a piano. And as noted in Yamaha.com, a piano keyboard has 88 keys. The number of strings depends on the model, but is usually around 230. For the tenor and treble notes, 3 strings are strung for each key, and for bass notes, the number of strings per note decreases from 3 to 2 and then to 1 as you approach the lowest bass notes. We've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.